You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
All right, monkeying around, start talking.
Mr. Babalina, Mr. Babalina,
about your podcast.
We talk about an Emmy-winning comedy series.
We talk about a band who outsold the Beatles and the Stones in 1967.
Still sticking to that story, huh? Well, if you know what's good for you, you'll change your tune.
We talk about a groundbreaking multimedia project
that inspired generations of artists and fans.
All right, throw the book at them.
This book is overdue.
Monkeying Around, a podcast about the monkeys.
Evidently, you do not realize you are in an interstellar conveyance. You are already outside the atmosphere of your own planet.
Monster attack! Monster attack! Monster attack! Monster attack!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Monster Attack, the podcast dedicated to old monster movies. Yes, I am well. The last two shows, I was sort of under the weather with whatever was going around here in Atlanta. And as promised, with us this week, Shane and Madeline are back. And
hello.
We're going to be talking not only about the Silver Scream Spook Show, but a great film that's coming your way. If you're listening to this when it was first released, the Spook Show will be coming your way a weekend after next on the 20th of April. And it's Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. What a great choice.
Otherwise known as Godzilla versus the Bionic Monster.
Yes. Oh, but you're going to get us sued if we use that title.
Universal's going to get Lee Majors is going to go and just knock us out.
I couldn't believe that. Yeah, they made such a big deal out. Well, we own Bionic, man. What was
it? I mean, Bionic. That was the catchphrase word of that whole year.
Oh yeah, the whole early 70s or whatever. I had the toy. Such a 70s film. Everything about it. There's a whole lot I want to talk about.
Yeah, they cram a whole lot of 70s into this movie.
And for Godzilla fans, there's only like two more of the original Godzilla films to come after this, and then made a long run. What of like 12 or 13 Godzilla films. I've got them listed here somewhere. Because this is down on the list. But
yeah, this was a big deal.
This was a lot of fun.
There was a lot of hype, and I'll never forget the hype for this movie because there were TV commercials, there was radio spots. I heard about, we were totally going crazy. There was that great Famous Monsters cover with Go-Go's painting.
Yeah.
And everybody was just so hyped for it. And so we were waiting to talk about this. So when did you first see Godzilla versus
That's what I was trying to think. You know, when Madeline first told me, said, hey, this is the movie we're going to be showing. So that's what I want to talk about. 1977, I think, was when it got released in the United States, if I remember correctly. And I was sort of in transition. I had just gotten out of school. I went to New York City, trying to find fame and fortune. And it came out somewhere around the time I was wrapping up in New York and heading back to Georgia, or still up in New York. And I don't think I saw this in the movie theater. I think this was one that I saw after I moved back to Georgia and like on Turner Broadcasting when they were doing a lot of... He did a lot of kaiju films on his Saturday night. That whole couple of years is just really sort of vague with me here. So much going on.
Yeah, it had a limited release. And knowing how New York was back in those days, it would have probably played a sleazy 42nd Street.
It probably did. Right? I mean, I remember seeing Rocky when I was up there. That's about the time I was living in New York, in Manhattan. But I don't remember this one.
Rocky or Mechagodzilla?
Yeah, I know. There. Well, it should have been no choice. That's why I think that maybe it wasn't there when I was up there. Because I think it came out more in the late spring. And I went back to Georgia somewhere around March of that year or something like that. But
Godzilla never would have treated his extras the way Stallone treats his.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Have you heard about all this stuff going on with Stallone? It's crazy.
I've been hearing, yeah, stuff here and there. It's wild what's been going on.
He's terrible. I've never worked with him, but everybody
I haven't either.
Everybody I know that's ever worked with him or been around him just says he's just insufferable, just terrible. So anything that they're saying about Stallone being a jerk is probably true. But we know Godzilla would never do that.
No, never, never.
So I'll never forget where I was when I saw this
movie. Okay, yeah, I want to hear this because I hate this. Like one of the first times that I can't really remember exactly.
Yeah, it was very, very special. Yeah. It played the Sunset Drive-In in Brunswick, Georgia.
Nice.
And the whole night, this magical night of going to this drive-in, is just seared into my brain. They used to sell these little spiral incense burner things that you would light to keep bugs out of the car or whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
And I remember that thing and I remember just being so hyped for Godzilla versus the Bionic Monster.
Yeah.
And the titles came up and it was Godzilla versus the Cosmic Monster. For a split second, I was like, oh no, they're playing the wrong movie.
And I was expecting to see Forrest Tucker.
But oh man, it was great. And Sergey was there, of course. And my little brother and I were big time monster kid, born monster kids. My parents were monster kids, so we got lucky to be raised by people that were so into this stuff.
Me too. Both out my of their parents way were to huge. Drive. My parents got me into monster movies. Yeah, big monster.
Made us watch the credits early on to be Ray Harryhausen, here's what he did.
Yeah.
Like I was being taught very early on.
He's taught proper film appreciation.
But Sergey and I were freaking out when Godzilla was beating up on Angulus.
Oh, I know. We couldn't believe it. Yeah,
we were like, oh my God. And I remember my mom getting upset because there was blood gushing out of his mouth.
It's the bloodiest Godzilla movie I think I've ever seen. We were like,
what is going on? And then there's violence later on in the movie too. Yeah. And I think I remember some cursing, which was not something that there was harsh words or something going on.
There may have been. Now I saw
my mother was
the one I just saw this week. I watched it a couple of times. It's the original Japanese with the subtitles. So they didn't put any profanity in the subtitles, but there may have been some cursing.
There. And there's nudity in the Japanese one. There's the bad guys have like posters of naked girls in their van.
Yes, yes, yeah. The bad guys.
What is going on with this movie? Yeah, bad guys. They always have pictures of naked women taped to the back of their.
Oh,
vans.
Absolutely. But I remember, because I had seen Godzilla versus Hedorah or Smog Monster when it was released in 72. And I was sort of, I don't want to say disappointed, or Madeline and I talked about that one way back when. And it was just like, I was sort of stunned at how much towards kids it was aimed at. And so it was, I went to a Saturday matinee, which made the experience pretty bad. But so when this came out and I saw it, I what I do remember is like, it was like, yeah, now this is getting back to Godzilla again. This is what I really like this. And I remember thinking, gee, Godzilla's lost some weight when he first shows up. And then before I realized that's not really Godzilla. Why is he sounding so weird? Why is he?
Yeah. What's going on here?
And then all of a sudden the real guy comes up. Is like, oh yeah,
here we go.
Here we go.
Godzilla versus Godzilla.
Yeah.
It's such a great start to this movie. Like, you're in for a wild ride.
Oh, absolutely.
Start of this movie.
And it's amazing to me that the director, John Fukuda, didn't like any of the Godzilla movies. He did.
No, he was ashamed of them.
Yeah, yeah. He
gave them all zero ratings. But, Jun Fukuda, or however you pronounce it.
However it is, I'm terrible about the Japanese names.
His Godzilla movies are so fun.
Yeah, like
we've shown Ibira a couple times on screen, and the crowd goes crazy. There's so much good like almost Buster Keaton sight gags going on in that movie. There's really a lot of, like, I don't know what he's talking about giving these movies a low rating.
It's I don't either.
Because he was used to working with Kurosawa and doing like eyebrow stuff. You know, a lot of these guys that worked on this movie worked with Kurosawa. You know,
you've got
this great score, and but like, I don't know. I maybe he thought he was slumming it, or and he didn't like that it was.
I know, you know, he'd been doing a lot of, he did a lot of detective type movies, a lot of action films, stuff like that. But I mean, it's like, and you can see it in this. I mean, there's a lot of action in this movie. I mean, there's fighting everywhere, and the fights are pretty good.
Yeah, there's some like karate fights and
some
guys.
Great wire work in this.
Yeah, it's fun. He, so he made. I forget what the movies were called, but he did some movies with a, you know, the other great Godzilla actor that you always think of is Akira Takarada. And he was like a James Bond character in a couple of these movies that Fukuda made. Now Takarada is not in this, but my favorite Godzilla actor of all time is in this, Akihiko Hirata.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I always call him the Christopher Lee of,
Japan
of Toho movies.
He shows up. I think didn't he even show up in the 85 Godzilla? If I'm not mistaken, he's just been around forever.
Yeah, yeah, he was. Mm-hmm. He was in a lot of this, a lot of that stuff. But yeah, there's a lot. So 70s things that happen in Mechagodzilla.
Well, I've got to talk. The one thing that I know this is the car. The car that he drives in this movie, oh my God. It was just like, I've got to know. And I spent the last 2 days trying to track down what kind of car it was, because it was like
a kit car.
Yeah, it's a
Volkswagen engine, probably, right?
Well, it's a Kenmari Skyline. That's its actual name. It's made by Nissan. 160 horsepower. Because it reminded me of like an old Javelin.
It reminded me of those kit cars, because it looked too small. You know, I figured it was like one of those. You remember how they did it in Death Race 2000? All those cars are so cool. They're all like kit cars. They were popular in the 70s. It was just like a fiberglass shell. Yeah. Usually it was a shell that was like done in like sparkly boat fiberglass.
Right.
You know, like, you ever saw one of them?
It's
always, as a kid, when I'd see them, I'd be like, oh man, look, it's the Mach 5.
That's right.
You know, it looked like a superhero machine. And come to find out, it's just a Volkswagen Beetle with a cool plastic.
Cool shell.
Yeah, no, this is actually a pretty high-end car for Japan.
Oh, wow.
I remember my folks had bought it, one of the first, when the box Toyotas came over here, but then they started bringing over the Coronas and the Corollas. And they bought a Corona, which was a limited edition, but it was a real high-end luxury type small car. And this one sort of falls into that range. It came out in 1969. And I just thought it was the coolest looking car. Even watching it this week, it was like, yeah, man, that is a cool look. I would buy one of those if I had. You can still get them. You can get replicas of them out of Japan, but it's going to cost you $40,000 to $75,000.
Whoa!
According to what I referenced, so it's like, it's not a cheap car. But there was just,
well, I was totally wrong about that.
I think it just brings back such great memories. I had I'd had a Javelin back then, which was like the worst car I ever bought in my life. It was such a piece of garbage, but they look cool. The Javelins look cool, but
were they cool?
Oh, but they were junk. Total junk.
I went through the windshield of one when I was 15 years old.
Well, that's exciting.
Don't scare the children that are listening. Well,
no, I mean,
podcast.
Don't be bad kids.
Yeah.
My friend Dylan Smith had waited all, you know, my grandparents saved me this Javelin. It was fluorescent green, like the coolest looking car ever.
Oh,
and
man.
He had it for 2 weeks, and we wrapped it around a tree one afternoon.
Well, they will kick. They will get up and kick. I mean, they would move. Yeah, they
it almost kicked me into the next world.
Yeah, jeez,
can't believe we survived. So I always get a nice little chill whenever I see a Javelin. I'm like, oh
yeah, it brings back horrifying memories.
Yeah, horrifying.
Oh, that car was so bad. But that was one cool thing I always loved about this movie.
There's a lot of cool things.
A lot of cool stuff.
The clothes are so cool. Yep. Everybody's got the big lapels and stuff.
Yeah. The gal with the big hat. I always, that's so 70s.
Yeah.
it almost envelops her whole head.
Yeah. She's like doing a Mickey Kaji.
Yes.
with that look, with the big hat. But yeah, so my favorite 70s thing is how the aliens are Planet of the Apes. It's like, we're just going to, we're going to call it the Bionic Monster. We're going to throw Planet of the Apes in here.
Yeah,
we're just going for it. Yeah.
I do remember that. The first time I saw it, when they kill the first one, and he starts and he just sort of half changes, or that doesn't kill him, but he sort of, and it's like, what? What the hell is that?
Yeah, what is going on? Now we get Planet of the Apes in here too.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just like, to be 7 years old and seeing all that, it was just like, wow.
Well, after all of the aliens that we had seen in Japanese films up until this point, going all the way back to the Mysterians, it was okay, well, these are sort of cool.
They're doing something different with
them. It's really different. So,
but some of these scenes and some of these setups really felt a lot like a James Bond kind of movie, with the villains were so charming, but so evil, but
yeah,
in a very they make you happy, these villains. I don't know.
Well, that's what we were saying. This Fukuda was into the spy genre.
Yeah, like he was. That was his
first
thing.
Big movie was Secret of the Telegian,
yeah,
which is a horror sci-fi thing, but it's a spy movie too. It's
right.
I love how there was so much sweat when they're trying to escape. So stressed out, and the sweat is pouring down their faces as they're trying to undo their
Well, the air conditioning went out on set that day.
Probably so.
Whatever. I think they just had a
lot of glycerin.
I just love the fact that these aliens that could make, they wanted to make something that modeled the most powerful monster on planet Earth, because they're going to conquer Earth. They come from, what was it, the third planet in the black hole or something? And they were able to do all of this
powerful
outer space transportation and make this monster that nearly kills Godzilla. But they're the stupidest people that I've ever. They would do some of the stupidest things, dude.
That's what happens when you let technology take over.
I guess so.
See what AI got those aliens? Got them in big trouble when they started dealing with real life, right?
Big mess.
Oh, man. That's the price you pay for giving it up.
And the main guy, all he did was just get on the microphone to Mechagodzilla and say, annihilate him.
Yeah.
Kill him. Get him. I was like, yeah, no kidding. That's
kill, crush,
here,
destroy.
Right? That's all I need from the villain. I don't need anything else.
But I like the guy. I like the guy at the beginning who was trying to steal the statue that had the little porno mustache. I call him the old porn mustache that was very popular in the mid to late 70s.
They're still very popular.
They're coming back. You should see our neighbors.
Yeah, they are.
He looks like TJ, Magnum P.I.
Magnum P.I., yeah. I've noticed that, stashes are coming back. Well, I had one up until, about 25 years ago, I think is when I cut it off, somewhere around 99 or something. I said, okay, it's time to get rid of this thing.
I can't. Facial hair freaks me out. It seems very.
Yeah, I went through that phase, did the full beard and then the mustache and then said, No, we'll just go clean from there.
Yeah, I can't do it. I tried to do it.
Yeah, this movie, every time I see it, it just gives me a rush of memories of how the 70s were.
Hard
to explain to people how that time was, but it was pretty wild times.
It was cool.
Yeah.
It was cool. Everybody looked cool. I was looking at pictures of production stills from some books I have in there, and there were scenes of, because it's not a Eiji Tsuburaya special effects extravaganza.
Right.
Hiroshi Nakano had taken over at this point. He started, his first thing was Smog Monster.
Yes.
That he ended up taking over, because I think people were getting sick of it. I think at that point, Tsuburaya, I don't know if this is fact or not, but I would guess that Tsuburaya was too busy with his television stuff and with Ultraman and all that.
Could be, yeah, because yeah, right? that was like hitting high gear at this point.
Yeah, yeah. So, but you look at those pictures of Nakano on set, and he's got the lapels and the big belt buckle. He looks like Chico in the Man or something.
Bell bottoms.
Everybody was so cool back then. They couldn't even like show up the set and make a monster movie without looking like they're ready to hit the disco or something.
But I loved, you know, even though my experience with Godzilla versus Hedorah was, it was, you know, putting up with all the little kids singing the song that had been there all day long. The effects were great. I loved the special effects. So when I saw he was doing the effects for this, I said, yeah, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I think I would have probably been mad too if I had seen Smog Monster for the first time as a college student.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Hey,
I was a senior in high school. It was
yeah.
Oh man. I mean, I walk in and all these kids are singing. I'm like, oh God, I'm in trouble.
Yeah. I was the right age. Madeline, you must have been the right age because Smog Monster is like your favorite, right?
I like Smog Monster.
Oh, it's a fun movie. It's a fun movie, except for the poor cat. I mean,
that poor kitty cat.
That poor kitty cat.
They cleaned him off, though.
I hope so.
You can only hope so.
Hope so.
Well, we didn't have any of that in here. The only thing that really just got me was like what you mentioned a minute ago. We see Godzilla bleeding, which just shocked the hell out of me when I saw this for the first
time. Yeah, there was some crazy,
wow, we've never seen violence. That before. And then we almost, you almost, well, in one, I'd heard that in one version of this, they sort of sanitized it a little bit for American release, but in one version, it made you think he died and then just sort of showed up when he shows up later on in the film for the big confrontation at the end.
Oh.
But, I don't know. I mean, it was still like, boy, this is pretty rough. I mean, this is
pretty heavy.
You know, especially, well, even when you had Mecha Godzilla disguised as Godzilla, when he grabs Anguirus and, you know,
like, and rips his jaw.
Rip his jaw off or whatever. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. It's rough stuff for a Godzilla.
So yeah. Parents, yeah, there's some violence in this, but I think the kids can handle it.
Kids are used to that stuff now.
Dinosaurs fighting each other. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fantasy violence, as it's fantasy called in the rating system.
I'm curious to see on the set, because I'll probably be at the Saturday afternoon show that you guys do, especially the people that had not seen this movie before, because I think they're just going to have a blast.
Mm-hmm. I think everybody's Godzilla crazy right now. We really loved Godzilla Minus One.
Oh, yes, yes.
And Shane saw it in the theater 5 times.
Yeah, I really loved it.
Yeah, I went, a large group of us went up to Mall of Georgia and saw it in IMAX.
Oh, you saw it in IMAX? Oh,
yeah, that was awesome. Really great fun. That was really...
And it won an Oscar.
It sure did.
God.
Deservedly so.
Yeah, Godzilla got an Oscar. Good for Godzilla.
Well, I'm sure it was because of the fact that a team of 35 VFX artists did something that somehow a 1,000-man team could not do, which is
make a compelling
really
movie.
Good VFX. Like, I still don't know how they did
it. Yeah, for the budget that they were working on, I don't know how they could do it either. Yeah, I was.
Yeah,
was
I saw a thing the other day that was saying, oh, I wish we had 15 million. It was closer to 10.
Yeah, it was 10. That's what I heard, 10 million.
Yeah.
I was like, are you kidding me? You can't even.
Yeah. Can't even cover craft services on a.
You can't even do a
Marvel
half an hour TV show for that anymore. You know, it's like,
yeah, it's crazy.
Oh my God.
And it's just so good. And there's so much going on in it. And then, because I'm not really a Monsterverse guy. I'm not a Monsterverse guy. Mm-hmm. I don't get American Godzilla stuff. But this new movie, and I was like, I don't care about it. I was so knocked out by Minus One. So this is the first time I did not go see a Godzilla movie on opening night.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, I waited.
Yeah.
But this Godzilla times Kong thing was so fun.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet, but I'm hearing great stuff about it.
It's so, like, just, you know, check your brain at the the door and just go in and have a blast. I ended up having to go without her because I was like, she's not going to go. She doesn't care.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see it in 3D, and now 3D makes her dizzy.
I know.
Oh, I love 3D movies, yeah.
I know.
Me too. But it was really, really fun. I was surprised. So, I mean, I've always got Godzilla fever. It's been something. I got it when I was 3, and I've had it ever since. And so I'm real excited that we're able to, like, have all this great Godzilla stuff happening, and then we get to bring this this crazy show, because we're really working on it, too. Like,
yeah, well,
it was by far that my favorite.
We'll have to have some supplemental materials for you to show here.
If you can see this, folks, we've got Mechagodzilla trying to get in on the action here.
Yeah, that's true. You'll see him on stage.
Yeah, we're gonna.
I figure he'll make an appearance at the show. Ever since I first saw the original Godzilla King of the Monsters, the one with Raymond Burr that we had here in the United States, I mean, he was always my favorite.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought he looked like some of my cats, the way they did the eyes.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why. I had some cats that reminded me. So I had a couple of cats that I called Little Godzilla because they had that look about
them. Yeah.
Eyes.
Godzilla always had
and he definitely
cat
had it
stuff
in this
in
movie.
Him.
He had a really tough guy. I mean, it was like when he came out of the water and saw that there was a guy pretending to be him, he was ticked off.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a...
Imposter!
Fukito, or however he pronounces his name, he might not have liked doing that, but he brought some real... He brought some real character to this Godzilla.
Yeah.
He's really good
stuff. He did. And this is around the time, too, when Godzilla is starting to take on some aspects of Bruce Lee, too.
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
You know, he gets mad. He wipes his nose like Bruce Lee. Like, here we go. It's getting serious. So, like, that 70s thing, you know, everybody had Kung Fu fever.
And
visually, there's a little bit of Kung Fu stuff going on with the... with the ancient civilization of King Caesar and the priest who kind of has this Time thing going on.
Yeah.
And
I guess we got to talk about King Caesar. Yeah. Cause I mean, that was like, wow. Okay. We got a new one making an appearance here.
And I loved his design too.
Yes. It was really cool. A lion dog, I think is what it translates into or something like that.
Kind of feels like those foo dogs that you see at outside of Asian restaurants when they've got like one hand up on the pearl and stuff.
It reminded me a little bit, even though the movie had not come out yet when this came out, of the evil little gremlins and Gremlins. I mean, you know, with the way the ears were and the way they did the eyes and stuff.
Mm.
It may have influenced Joe Dante and his folks as to how to design the bad gremlins in that movie.
Spike.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love the look. Yeah, it was really a good look.
Yeah, I love King Caesar, and I
but
love
we never
the whole
got to
thing.
See him again. That's
he comes out and he does a thing. You see the idol almost more. You know.
Yeah, yeah. I was surprised that they didn't find a way to put him in other movies, but
you weren't going to see him again.
Well, they were
until
sort of wrapping
Final
up
Wars.
this cycle of Godzilla at this point. So
yeah.
I think he had Megalodon after that, and I forgot what there was one last one.
You got Terror of Mechagodzilla.
Terror of Mechagodzilla.
Megalon was first.
Yeah, which is interesting that Ishiro Honda comes back into action and does the sequel
to
this one, which I have not seen. I have not seen that. So
Terror of?
I've got to go dig that up, and I don't believe I've seen that one.
It's great. There's a lot of stock footage.
Yeah.
You know, they were using Toho was always using a lot of that stuff. But Terror of Mechagodzilla has a lot of stock footage in it. But,
it's
good.
That one I've got to find. But the whole aliens making a big robot. I think it was in Germany they said they called the Mechagodzilla King Kong.
Oh, yeah. It was probably called Frankenstein versus King Kong in Germany.
Yeah, because of the previous, you know.
They call Godzilla Frankenstein over there.
Right.
So... Yeah, maybe. So we got to talk about the design of Mechagodzilla.
Yes.
Because through the years, there's been so many different Mechagodzillas. And they've done a lot of neat things with Mechagodzilla. Yeah. Like, including, like, I don't know if you've watched, like, the newer stuff where Kiryu is this, like, almost Evangelion type super robot that's got, you know, Godzilla DNA in it and stuff. They go real crazy with it. But for me, this 74 Mechagodzilla is the classic design. And it's because it looks like Harper Goff got involved, because it reminds me of the Nautilus from 20,000 Leagues.
It does. You know,
with all the rivets and everything. Yep. It's just so, so perfectly designed. I love. What are you doing there?
I'm drawing.
She's drawn some.
Drawn some Mechagodzilla.
If only Mechagodzilla transformed into a submarine instead of the rocket.
It does. You're right. It's got that look to it. It surprised me a little bit. I mean, this is supposed to be this advanced race and all that stuff. They got all these rivets.
But they're using rivets.
But it's still got such a cool look to it.
Yeah. Rivets are cool. Steampunk stuff is a lot cooler. I'm into that stuff. I don't think they've ever come close to topping this original design.
No.
Like maybe conceptually, the thing they did with Kiryu is like really like wild and kind of it's got a tragic, weird edge to it and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's like, does Kiryu have a soul? You know, they get into this weird stuff. But there's no beating this original design of Mechagodzilla.
No, it's awesome.
So cool about it.
And you really see how big it is, because they have a couple of nice shots with forced perspective, you know, the two little guys roaming around the base. And I remember the first time I saw it, saying, wow, that thing is huge. I didn't realize how big that thing was.
Yeah. Is that the first time you really see that like master shot like that in a...
It's one that stuck with me. It's one of the few. Yeah. I may have seen it before, but I mean, because we knew that Godzilla was like 60 or 70 feet tall, but you know, you never really.
Well, I always saw 150 feet tall by this point.
Right? Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. But we always saw him like beating up buildings and stuff like that, but you never just saw that perspective of someone standing at his feet. But here, I mean, it was just it was nice, and he gives it to you two or three times.
Yeah, those shots of them working on the robot.
Yeah, yeah,
and have been duplicated in every giant robot movie ever. You know, up to Pacific Rim, that shots in Pacific Rim five times. You know,
yeah, another favorite of mine. I love that movie.
yeah, he did a great job. But yeah, I wish, because I'm really into putting together like Japanese model kits and stuff.
Yeah.
And we dream of a day when they make a 74 Mechagodzilla in a Gundam style kit where it's like snapped together and you see all the inner structure of it.
That would be cool.
Yeah, they've done a Kiryu, but like we've never gotten the 74, which one day. You know, Bandai.
I'm with you. That is the definitive Mechagodzilla. Yeah. They really haven't improved on him at all.
Yeah, yeah. It's the definitive design.
All of the cool little weapons he's got and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Everybody's got lasers or whatever that shoots out of their eyes in these movies. It seems like.
Yeah, they're getting into the optical effects, right?
Right. Right.
But this is pre-Star Wars, so...
Yes, it was 3 years before Star Wars.
So, yeah. So, there before that. But Mechagodzilla had, like, the rainbow rays and stuff.
Yeah, they're very colorful. Cool stuff. Yeah, yeah, real, real colorful stuff. And again, you know, as we've talked about a lot, and even nowadays, you know, so much of the Japanese special effects are practical. I'm a huge fan of practical effects. Versus, you know, overuse of CGI. I mean, yeah, there's some incredible things you could do with CGI, but sometimes you can get sloppy. You get sort of.
Oh, yeah. I think
when you have practical, it's a lot more fun. I think sometimes when you overuse CGI, you lose a little bit of that relatability.
Well, there's a dimensional thing that's lost.
It's almost like, I think this is why we have so much fun at spook shows and why audience members have such a good time, because you can see, like, you can put yourself in their shoes and laugh about the the difficulties of trying to make something look real and be entertaining or not. And I think you lose that sometimes when you're trying to create something that's hyper realistic, that you there's something that doesn't feel right about it.
Yeah.
Because it's so hyper realistic that you build sort of a distrust of it, where you question the reality that you're trying to suspend disbelief, but we are suspending disbelief, and it's a lot of fun. And I think it's even more fun when we see how they're doing it in
absolutely
a continuous way.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not just relatable, it's accessible. And I think that's like a huge,
that's a good word.
Yeah. It's like a huge thing when you break it down to that. It's the same way that like Ray Harryhausen would talk about his effects. Like when Jurassic Park started happening and all the change started happening, he would talk about how delightful this new technology is, but he would say, but it lacks the fantastical dreamlike quality of handmade stop motion animation. And there's something that you just can't get other than,
well, you know, it's something you can put your hands on, you know. Yeah. I mean, even though we've gone light years with three dimensional looks, you know, on CGI and stuff, you know, compared to some of the early animated stuff that they did in the 80s. They're just something real about these practical effects. And that's, you don't quite get that. I remember when, you know, digital music was really getting hot and all that. And there were some of us purists. It was like, we still preferred the vinyl because there was an organic element to it that was just, the digital was almost too perfect. And, you know, and people said, that's crazy. You know, but it's like, no, you know, and then now you see vinyl coming back again. And I think
now
people are discovering how cool the organic sound of that vinyl has.
How weird that low end is that comes out of a vinyl record. It's like, it's like the difference between listening to Black Sabbath on LP or CD. There's something that's weird, low end.
Because I was a huge Sabbath guy. Yep.
On LP.
Yeah.
But like, and Tsuburaya said the same thing about it. Now I know that he didn't work on this movie, but like, Batty.
We got a cat visitor.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we are
our own little King Caesar.
I was gonna say King Caesar always comes to visit us here.
So
always welcome.
Yeah, he's on high alert. So there's a scene, forget which movie, it might be Frankenstein Conquers the World, or it's something that Baragon is in, and Baragon's like eating a cow or something, and it comes up in the shot, and you can tell it's a toy cow in the mouth, and somebody was interviewing him and was like,
what was it? I think it was Frankenstein Conquers the World.
Yeah, I think it's Conquers the World. And they were like, you know, why did you use the toy cow? And he like, why didn't you get something more realistic and have it struggling and stuff? And he was like, well, where's the fun in that? You know, like, that's no fun. Like, these guys, they weren't.
And you don't want to get the SPCA mad, because they're on set, they're watching you.
You know, no miniaturizing a cow and then killing it on screen.
Yeah, no cows were harmed in the making of this.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's something very, it sums up the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, where's the fun in that? Like, why would you CGI this when we could painstakingly stop motion animate it?
And
you know, it's just, there's something really beautiful to that thought process where you're,
well,
like,
it's like some of the little movies we used to make as kids when we all had our 8mm cameras, and some of the special, we had to get very creative on our special effects because we didn't have any money.
Yeah.
And it was amazing some of the stuff we could come up with.
Kids, you know, don't give up hope. Kids are still doing it.
They're doing it with their
cell phones and Legos, and they're making all this stuff. And
as long as
Legos,
you can do a frame by frame shot, you know, you can do some amazing things.
Lego even made a toy line that encouraged that sort of play.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like, showed you how to add effects to your shots of your stop motion. So I think stop motion is in a renaissance right now.
I hope so. Yeah, I've always enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah, like, you're seeing these big budget, Leica, you know, like that studio. Friend of mine went out there. He said they had like 10 stages running at the same time.
Oh, wow.
Like 10 animation stages. And you think about that and you think about poor Ray Harryhausen, which is, you know, he's working on a table this big by himself, like in a garage, doing all this. Yeah, in a garage. And now they've got these giant sets that are bigger than this whole house.
Oh, my God. They're
animating these crazy sequences. So I think that I don't think it's going to die off. Mm-mm. You know, I think it's people want to see it.
For sure.
I want to see Suitmation make a comeback now.
Mm-hmm.
That would be cool.
I want to see a kaiju movie with classic special effects work. And
we'll do it.
Yeah, we're going to have to.
We'll do it.
Somebody's got to do it. Like,
if they can do Godzilla minus one with on a $10 million special effects budget,
Who knows? I don't know if you saw, like, Shin Godzilla was supposed to be mostly practical.
Oh, I loved Shin Godzilla. Yeah. We are going to talk about that on this show, on this podcast. I have been saving that one for, and that's one that I pull out probably two or three times a year just to watch.
It's crazy.
So Kane and I flew all the way to Japan to go see that. We went with our Fred and Renee, and we met up with
Kyle and Ashley. We had a whole group of us.
We went to Japan in 2016.
And we go to the premiere of Shin Godzilla, and we're sitting there. And
this was our first time ever.
4D theater.
Yeah. So this had, of course, not made it to the United States. We'd never heard of such a thing yet.
Yeah.
Of a 4D experience. And I still have the photo that I took of the outside of the theater about all the warnings, the butt poker, and like, don't go to this theater if you're pregnant.
Yeah, neck problems.
Yeah.
We're like, what are we getting into?
You're getting into a Japanese William Castle film.
Yeah, it was every William Castle. William Castle was like applauding.
Lightning. Yeah. Oh, I imagine so. Yeah.
They had debris falling from the ceiling.
That's so much fun.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
But as you know, Shin Godzilla requires subtitles.
Yes. Yes.
And we're just like, what is going on?
Yes.
It was like 5 minutes with the office chair and the Xerox machines plugged in. And we're like,
what is happening? Because if we know zero Japanese and we were just basing it off of imagery, so the meaning of the film and the entire story,
kind of
especially the whole thing about, you know, how inept the government was.
Pick that up.
It's the best part of the whole movie.
It's
still one of my favorite Godzilla films. It's just for that aspect of it, because these guys are just so inept.
Yeah, they keep making the wrong decision every time.
This thing is just like wiping us out, and you guys are having a conversation about this and that and the other.
Yeah. It's probably the way it would really happen, right?
Absolutely. That's the thing. You know, I didn't see Shin Godzilla until like about 10 years ago. I guess it's been about 10. About the time it first, I'm trying to think when it first came over to the United States and I was able to get a copy of it. But it'd been out a little bit when I saw it.
Yeah, it took because it only played a few theaters in the United States.
Yeah, I had to see it on video. It was on home video. And and that element of it just, I was like, oh my God, they have got this so pegged. As far as the whole bureaucratic nonsense going on with this thing just wiping them out while they're having these stupid it's like Congress today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just stay away from the news.
Yes. Yes.
No. Maybe we need Godzilla right now.
We do need Godzilla.
Oh, we do need Godzilla right now. Yeah, that would. Yeah, we need to need something to wake these people in Washington up, because it's just gotten so ridiculous. So what kind of special stuff can we expect to see at the Spook Show?
Well, definitely monster.
I know, you don't have to give away
monster fight guarantee.
Well, we always have a monster fight guaranteed at every show, but this one's going to be ridiculous.
This one's going to be totally nuts.
Yeah, we're
a showdown for the history books.
Well, we always turn it up a little bit. And going back to what it was like during the late 70s Godzilla boom in America. Do you remember that they used to do, okay, remember how they used to do planetarium shows?
Oh, right? I loved them. Yeah.
Frank,
yeah.
Like Led
Absolutely.
Zeppelin or Pink Floyd. I never got to experience that.
Well,
but
I was living in Chapel Hill and we had a huge planetarium up there. And I can't think of the rock group that came up. It wasn't a famous rock group, but it was a good one.
Yeah,
I remember they would do it once a year, and it was
and they'd play in the planetarium.
Great show, yeah, oh, unbelievable.
So they did a Godzilla tour.
Yeah, okay.
And they sent some monster suits over, and they would have a live Godzilla show in the planetarium. I saw ads for this on TV. Begged to go. We didn't get to ever see it, but I had always imagined what this thing was like. I even recreated it once for my whole family on the back patio
nice.
With a bunch of fireworks and popsicle stick buildings and a Shogun Warrior Godzilla.
Oh, cool.
And they sat through about half of it. It was just, you know, what is wrong with our kid? But yeah, back when an 8-year-old kid could play with fireworks.
Yes.
But like, but
I remember those days. Yeah.
Yeah. Smoke bombs. But, so what I've basically done with and what we're going to do with this show and what we've done with the Spook Show a couple of times where you've seen us do giant monster stuff, we basically just do that.
We're
but just
creating
a
Shane's
bigger,
imagination
yeah.
of what he thought that tour was like.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So we have, you know, people come out and, you know, cardboard monster suits
don't
and
spoil,
monster suits. I'm not spoiling it, but I mean, people can expect, I mean, if people were at Smog Monster, they saw Smog Monster and Baby Godzilla get into a rap battle on stage. We always do something silly and fun and epic, and it
yeah.
makes the children of all ages happy.
That's
and
right.
Probably most of all.
Well, myself. When it comes to Godzilla, I don't think we ever grow up. I never
did. You shouldn't. You should never let go of that love for
That's
these
right.
fantastic
Not for
things. You got to stay gold.
Hold on.
Hold on to that dream.
Mm-hmm.
So Madeline, what do you got to say about the Spook Show? You want to give them the info?
Oh, well, we hope to see you there. Two shows.
Yeah.
April 20th. We have our matinee at 1:30 and our late show at 10 p.m. Tickets will be available online if you prefer to buy online beforehand or at the theater.
Yes.
We'll
yes.
have all kinds of fun. We'll have, of course, t-shirts. And
oh,
we'll
t-shirts.
Have,
yeah. You
we'll
got the poster and that
poster.
Yes.
Coolest
yeah,
poster.
A,
this is one of the coolest.
Well, thank you.
Posters.
Yeah. That was Kevin Ray and yeah. Shane came up with that design. And
I loved it. Yeah.
yeah.
A lot of fun. Something different for us. And
yeah, Kevin
we're,
gave
we're
it
very,
a real 90s science fiction
yeah.
kind of
yeah.
rock and roll
yeah.
thing. Like, he's the best. So.
Yeah, we can't wait. We're very excited about this show, and
yeah.
we're all excited about all of them. But
yeah, we try to do a Japanese fantasy film.
Yeah, we try to vary up the genres because sometimes people prefer a sword and sandal with stop motion or a classic.
Well, we give them that too.
Yeah, we just
yeah.
try to give everybody a little bit of everything.
Yeah,
hopefully wanted by all, but not everybody wants the same thing. So
but this being the 50th year
yeah.
anniversary.
Yeah.
Well, that was the other thing I really loved when you mentioned that you were doing this one. It was like, oh, yeah, man, this is their 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
Yeah,
hard
there are
to
a lot
believe.
Of great.
It's
I mean, there are a bunch
years.
Of 70 anniversaries this year. Some of
yes.
So we've Godzilla came out in 1954.
That's right.
Creature from the Black Lagoon came out.
Yep. yep.
54
was
a very
a great
good year.
Them.
Big year. So
yeah.
I'm just trying
a
to
bunch
think.
Of movies.
These were all the movies that my parents, when they were dating, went and saw before when they got married. And
mm-hmm.
probably, they say that's probably why that I took to monster movies so well, because
oh, perfect.
They always went to the, they were big drive-in people. So they would go see these.
Yeah, it's in their DNA.
Movies and you know, but I remember them talking about them. It was always, you know, one they talked about, but all those great 54 movies. And then, of course, I came along at the end of the year.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It was
ready to go.
Be.
Yeah.
Yes.
No truth to the rumor that when I came out, said, where are the monster movies at?
Yeah.
yeah, I'm not surprised. But here we are.
But good stuff, folks. Yeah. So if you're hearing this podcast for when it first got released, you've got time still to get your tickets and go see Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla at the Plaza Theater in Atlanta. And if you don't live in Atlanta, it's worth the drive. Definitely worth the drive, I think.
Yeah. Or the flight.
We get requests for, can't you guys, you know, you're so far away. We are trying to figure out a way to make it where we can stream, but we're just not that advanced yet.
Oh, well, we started filming the shows with a couple cameras, and we're going to try to put a YouTube channel together in October and get things out there so people can start.
So if you're not able to attend
I don't know how I feel about streaming it live though.
Yeah, I think it'll lose quite a bit of the charm of what it is for the
theater. Yeah, because it's like it's like streaming at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then actually, you know, there's still something about going to see a movie at a movie theater. That experience with an audience. I mean, you can't bring in 100 people to your house to watch.
You got to be in that room with the people.
There's just something.
You got to feel the energy of the audience and
all the screaming and craziness.
Yeah, the watching the movies with the attendees is really like, it's such an unforgettable shared experience. It's just so great.
And that's something I got to experience as a kid. They did these matinees and I got to see Destroy All Monsters in a matinee that was just, there was not an adult within a mile of this.
No, that's what we had those Saturday afternoon, or we had those Saturday matinees. So do a double feature and a little short something or a cartoon or
totally
something.
Totally nuts.
Yep.
I mean, usually we got.
That's how I saw a lot of my Hammer films. Yeah, they would come in with these Hammer double features or whatever, and then
we got that once.
Or a William Castle film or something. That's how I saw a couple of them. And it was at the big theater, because we had the little theater around the corner. They usually showed all the monster movies, but when it came to the big theater, boy, that was special.
Yeah, and those kids would just tear the place apart.
Absolutely.
Like scene in Ed Wood where they're at the premiere and there's just popcorn flying everywhere and kids are screaming.
Right.
It was just nuts.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so we try to replicate that experience, but without the mess.
Yes.
As much, you know. You know, a little less violent. But it feels good to see these things on the big screen where they belong, because the only way to see a Godzilla movie is on a big screen.
They're made for it, and you
feel it in a different way, and he's just as big as he's supposed to be, and everything is as ponderous and fantastic and important as it should be. So, if you get the chance.
We hope to see you.
I know. I need to get up to the Mall of Georgia. I have no excuse not. I live in Atlanta because I've seen a couple of IMAXs.
We'll
to drive over from
whenever
Carson.
We go. Whenever we see a big monster movie,
70 million.
Yeah, we try to.
It's been a while. I think the last IMAX I saw, and this is terrible, but it was James Cameron's Titanic film.
Oh wow!
Documentary that he did in IMAX.
Documentary.
But I'm a Titanic freak, so I mean, I'll drive 100 miles to see that. But the. That whole IMAX experience is just
mm-hmm. It's cool. Yeah, the first when we went, I was like, oh my gosh, this was the first time I went to an IMAX ever. The Mall of Georgia wasn't that old, and I got to see The Lion King.
Oh wow! Yeah.
Because
they re-released,
yeah. And at the time we were studying Hamlet in high school, so they wrote this off as a good field trip day.
Absolutely!
For high schoolers, that's cooler than what I'd expect from Johns Creek.
Yeah,
man.
I think my first IMAX was
at
Fernbank. I think it was Fernbank. Still have their IMAX.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was, but I remember taking my nephew to see something.
My first IMAX was like something like that. Flight of the Dinosaurs you know, the Disappearing Reefs or something like that. You know. Then they started, you know, releasing them and shooting movies in 70 and stuff. So
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
Well, folks, Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. Yeah, see it on the big screen. But it is easy to find. Yeah. It is out on DVD and VHS.
Yeah, nowadays everybody's got a big screen at their house, right?
Yeah,
like, you know, an 80-inch TV is almost affordable now. So.
I know you guys think I'm a shill for Amazon Prime, but this one's on Max. You can get this.
Yeah, it is on Max right now. They have a bunch of.
They got like five or six of these.
Yeah, because they're tied in with Turner Classic Movies, and Turner's got all of the kaiju films. Yeah. Well. You can just about find them all through Max now.
So, yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can definitely get it if you're not able to come to show.
Well, guys, we'll
thank
have to
you
get,
so much.
We'll
this
have to
is
get
always
together.
So much
yeah,
fun.
Of course, you guys are always welcome to sit in, even when we're not doing a Silver Screen Spook Show. What's the next one coming up? Can you tell us what the next one?
Yeah. So we're doing Seventh Voyage of Sinbad.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That's going to be July 13th.
Awesome.
And so we have a little break.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on at the theater. They have the film festival and I think a bunch of other.
Yeah, we're getting into the real
special. They just have back-to-back
busy
weekends, which I'm so glad because you want that theater to stay
absolutely
busy.
And then, absolutely.
They're doing great.
Yep. They and are. Then we will definitely be at Monsterama.
Well, I was going to ask if you guys were going to be there because Elizabeth Shepherd.
Now it's in August.
Elizabeth Shepherd asked me if you were going to be there.
We are going to be there. Jesus. We can't wait to see Elizabeth again.
Yeah.
She was such a delight.
Oh, I know.
What a lovely, lovely lady.
I was stunned she remembered who I was. And I get this email. She says, I hope you're coming. And I was like, yes, I'm going to be there.
Oh, she is the cutest.
She's really great.
Yeah. I can't wait to see her. And then, we will be there.
Yep.
Yeah. We'll do a little mini spook show as well.
I'm hoping they'll let us do a Monster Attack panel again this year because we didn't get to do one last year. So be prepared.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah. I'm ready.
We'll be there the whole weekend.
Yep. Me too. Yep. Gonna be
right.
Taking some time off. All righty, guys.
All right.
We will see you next time, and I'll see you guys at the Spook Show coming up here
in just a week
or so.
Good luck tomorrow. We'll check in with you,
get the knee fixed up here. Yeah, I should be in good shape by the time I see the Spook Show. So.
Great.
You're going to be the bionic monster.
I'll be the bionic. Well, yeah. they're just scoping me. They're just cleaning me out.
Okay.
All righty, folks. Have a great week, and we will see you on Monday.
All right.
Woo.
We cordially invite you to experience the Soul Forge podcast.
On Soul Forge, we chat about movies, books, and pop culture.
Sex, love, and dating.
Travel and adventure.
Mental health issues.
We have interviews with musicians, authors, entrepreneurs, and other random weirdos. Join Sean
and Leah
and the occasional animal interruption on the Soul Forge podcast.
Be a better human with the Soul Forge podcast.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.